This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast.
Hi, Tanya.
How you doing today?
Today's a great day. How are you?
I'm doing great. I have another exciting episode. So thank you, everyone, for joining us here at Crimes and Consequences.
I can't wait to record it because this is our third take.
Is it only the third one? Before I tell the story today, I'm going to remind everyone to please subscribe or follow on whatever podcast app you're listening to us on. And with that,
let's just get started.
Okay, fine. On December 1st, 2018, Cheryl Barrett was really worried about her daughter, Kelsey. She hadn't seen or heard from Kelsey since Thanksgiving, which was November 22nd that year. And on December 1st, she called her son, Kelsey's brother, Clint. They had both called and sent several texts to Kelsey since November 22nd, but never received an answer. Clint had even sent a Christmas tree ornament for Kelsey's daughter, his niece, her name was Kaylee, which was delivered to Kelsey's the week after Thanksgiving, and he never got a call to thank him, which was really unusual. Clint decided to fly to his mom's home in northern Idaho from his house in Tacoma, Washington, so they could figure out what to do next. From Cheryl's home, Clint and Cheryl flew to Colorado, where Kelsey lived. They rented a car and drove out to Kelsey's home in Woodland Park. Even though she was really worried, Cheryl didn't want to call the police just yet, or at least not until she checked everything out for herself first. Kelsey loved living in Woodland Park. She had a job she loved at DOS Aviation in Pueblo, and even though Pueblo was about a mile away, she loved working there because she was a pilot. She lived in her home, it was actually a condominium, in Woodland Park with her daughter Kaylee, who was a year old when our story takes place. Kaylee's father, Patrick, didn't live with Kelsey, but they had recently gotten engaged, and they had plans of moving in together in the near future. Kelsey had moved from her home in Washington State to be with Patrick. They had met online a few years prior, and when they fell in love, Kelsey moved. Patrick, who lived with his mother, worked as a rancher and a furrier.
What's that?
It's F-E-R-R-I-E-R.
Is that one of those guys that dresses up as a stuffed animal or whatever?
No, that's a furry.
Oh.
Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong, but they are people who trim the hooves and put shoes on the horses.
Oh, gotcha.
And he also was a horse trainer. On December 2nd, so the day after, Clint flies in. Cheryl and Clint arrived to Chelsea's home, and Cheryl walked in the front door. What she noticed first was that Kelsey wasn't home, despite her vehicle being in the driveway. Actually, it was very quiet in the condo, almost too quiet, and Cheryl noticed it was warm inside. Cheryl thought if Kelsey had gone on an impromptu trip, she probably would have turned down the thermostat like most people do when they leave home for an extended period of time.
I always forget.
Do you?
And you know my shit's cranked high. Yes.
That house is warm. Cheryl's anxiety grew. Also, Kelsey wasn't the type of person who would just leave and not tell anyone where she was going. As Cheryl looked around, she noticed a plate of cinnamon rolls sitting on Kelsey's kitchen counter, and they were hard as rocks. She told Clint that when she last spoke to Kelsey on Thanksgiving morning, Kelsey had told her mother she was making cinnamon rolls.
Oh, shit.
I know. These had to be the ones she was making that morning. So Cheryl's anxiety got ratcheted up another notch. Because she realized these had to be those cinnamon rolls.
And they're like 2 weeks old, right?
Right. And they hadn't been touched. Cheryl continued to look around and noticed next how clean the condo was. There wasn't any lint or stains anywhere. and you could even see the streaks from where someone had wiped down everything. Whoever had cleaned the condo didn't do a very good job because they did leave behind streaks. Cheryl and Clint noticed the garbage cans were full and had been moved from where they normally sat, and the laundry room was a disaster, which really wasn't like Kelsey.
So parts of it are very clean and other parts are messy.
Yeah. In the bathroom, Cheryl found Kelsey's makeup bag and toothbrush, again indicating that Kelsey probably hadn't left on a trip, because why would she leave those things behind?
Nope, you do not leave that behind.
Definitely not your makeup bag. I have left a toothbrush behind, but you can just go quickly buy those.
Your standards are kind of strange.
But okay. I've accidentally left. But you can just run to the drugstore.
That's true.
They also found Kelsey's luggage in a closet. When Cheryl and Clint left Kelsey's condo, they were left with more questions than they had when they first arrived.
Did they see anything interesting about Kaylee's room or anything?
Nope. Everything seemed okay, and Kaylee obviously wasn't there. While they were still at the condo, Cheryl decided to call Kelsey's fiancé, Patrick, to see if he knew anything. When Cheryl called him, and she told him that she couldn't find Kelsey, he told her that he didn't know if he could be much help. Patrick told her that he and Kelsey had broken up a few days prior to Thanksgiving, and she hadn't spoken to him since. Cheryl was shocked by what he said. Kelsey never indicated to her that she and Patrick were having problems, and she seemed to be so happy and content with her life at the time.
Yeah, but often we don't share everything with our parents.
That's true. But even though you don't share everything, Kelsey would have probably told her mom if her and Patrick had broken up.
Yeah, or hinted that there were problems.
Right. Cheryl asked if Patrick would reach out to Kelsey to call her, and he seemed reluctant and didn't initially answer her. She pleaded with him, and he finally agreed and told her he would call Kelsey, but only after he took care of his cows. So it's really not a priority for him. Then they hung up. After hanging up with Patrick, Clint, who had been in the bathroom, came into the kitchen and led his mother into Kelsey's bathroom. And she has like a two-story condo, so I believe this is the bathroom downstairs. Cheryl looked around and saw what Clint had seen. There were tiny bloodstains on the toilet and in the tub. Cheryl's stomach dropped. She knew now that wherever Kelsey was, she was probably in danger, and she didn't want to think about it if it was worse than that. She called the Woodland Park Police and spoke with Corporal Dina Curran. After hanging up with Cheryl, the first call Corporal Curran made was to Patrick. She questioned him, and he told her that Kelsey wasn't his fiancée anymore, and they had broke up. He told her that he and Kelsey had had a, quote, heart-to-heart, unquote, before Thanksgiving, and they decided that their relationship just wasn't working anymore. Patrick told her his mother didn't like Kelsey, never had, so it was always a tense situation whenever Kelsey was around his family.
But what about the fact they have a child together?
I know, right? Besides his mom not liking Kelsey, Patrick stated they just were from different backgrounds. He had returned all of Kelsey's belongings that were at his house and had given her back his key to her condo, as well as an extra car key and handgun that she had given him. He said he last communicated with Kelsey on November 25th, 3 days after Thanksgiving. It had sent her a text that said, quote, "Do you even love me?" end quote. And Kelsey never answered him.
And he hadn't seen his daughter since then either?
No, he has their daughter with him.
So the baby's with him?
Yes.
That's interesting.
I know. And she hasn't been seen since Thanksgiving, and he's had the baby this whole time. And don't you think that's weird?
Absolutely.
Right.
That's probably why you're telling me this story.
On December 4th, so this would be about 2 days after Cheryl and Clint first visited Kelsey's condo, Cheryl went to DOS Aviation to visit Kelsey's boss. He told her Kelsey hadn't been to work in several days, and the last time he had heard from her was on November 25th. She sent him a text that said, quote, "Hi, Ray. Sorry for the late notice, but I won't be able to make it in this week. I need to go see my grandma who is sick," unquote. Kelsey's grandma wasn't ill, so Cheryl was really puzzled.
Is she a commercial pilot?
No, it's a private pilot for like a small airport.
Like where, a charter?
Yeah, like a charter. Yes. Kelsey's boss also showed Cheryl a message he got from Kelsey on Thanksgiving Day that said, quote, "Hi, Ray. It was a great day. Happy Thanksgiving to you too," end quote. Ray said he thought something was weird about the messages he received on Thanksgiving and on the 25th. First, Kelsey never put a comma after his first name when she texted him. It was always an exclamation point. Second, she always put emojis in her text to him, and the two messages didn't have any.
It's funny how we notice the little things.
I know, right?
In the end.
He said it was like someone else sent the messages to him. The Woodland Park police searched Kelsey's condo and didn't find anything suspicious except for the blood in the bathroom. There was no sign of forced entry and no sign of a struggle. Nothing was missing except a bedroom carpet, and nothing else really seemed amiss.
Bedroom carpet?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a rug?
Yes, a rug.
That's a little suspicious.
Yeah, that's a little weird. The police collected evidence from Kelsey's home, including an iPad, a notebook with passwords, and a Safeway grocery store receipt from November 22nd at 12:22 p.m., which was the last confirmed public sighting of Kelsey.
And that's Thanksgiving, right?
Yes. Soon, though, the Colorado Bureau of Investigations, the CBI, joined the case, namely agents Greg Slater and Kevin Torres. Cheryl gave them consent to search one of the vehicles in Kelsey's driveway because it was in her name. There were two. She also told them about the text messages. She, too, had received messages from Kelsey that just didn't seem like they were from her. The sentences just seemed wrong. Kelsey always wrote her texts in complete sentences, and the ones Cheryl received had abbreviations that Kelsey never used. Cheryl offered a theory to the CBI agents. She said she believed Patrick had Kelsey's phone and sent those messages. The agents then asked her what she thought happened, and she told them she feared Kelsey was dead. Agents Torres and Slater first searched the Chevy Silverado truck, the vehicle that was in Cheryl's name, that was in Kelsey's driveway, with a cadaver dog.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The dog, Lucy, was a bloodhound, and she trotted around the outside of the truck, sniffing every inch. She had been trained to lay down if she found the scent of human remains.
What a job.
I know. Bless those dogs, right?
Poor dog.
Oh, man.
Lucy.
Lucy. As she made her way around the truck, she finished her search without giving the signal. Next, Lucy searched the outside of the Toyota Corolla that was also in Kelsey's driveway.
Why'd she have two cars?
I think one's a truck, so she must need the truck for something.
Hmm, that's nice.
Yeah, and that car was in Kelsey's name. As Lucy sniffed the back corner of the driver's side, she lay down. She had gotten a hit and found the scent of human decomposition. Based on this, the agent searched the inside of the car. There was a bloody sock on the front passenger seat that they collected into evidence, but other than that, the car was clean.
So where exactly did Lucy get the scent from?
It was outside the back corner of the driver's side, on the outside of the car.
Did they let the dogs hop in?
They had to have.
Right? That's what I'm thinking.
That's what I'm thinking. After Lucy's work with the vehicles was completed, she was led into Kelsey's home. Lucy only signaled one time in the condo. It was in the upstairs bathroom, which, like I said, I believe it's a different bathroom than where the blood was initially found by Clint and Cheryl. On December 4th, that's the same day that Cheryl visited Ray at DOS Aviation, police showed up to Patrick's home and asked him to turn over his cell phone. They didn't have a warrant, but said they'd come back with one if he didn't want to turn it over voluntarily.
I'll take my chances and not turn it over. Right.
But Patrick had a brother, Sean, who was a cop, not for Woodland Park, who happened to be there when the police showed up. Sean told Patrick, just turn over your phone. So he did.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you don't.
It kind of looks weird. But I can tell you, Patrick was kind of pissed at Sean because he felt like Sean didn't have his back on that one.
Yeah, mind your own business, bro.
Right. The next day, on December 5th, Patrick made a trip to a credit union where he and Kelsey had an account together. He didn't go there to withdraw money or anything like that, though. He wanted to speak to the branch manager, Patricia. He initially asked Patricia if she knew who he was.
You know who I am?
Do you know who I am?
You know who I am.
The news of Kelsey's disappearance had exploded all over the media and even made it to national outlets, so it was basically everywhere. It was headline news. When he asked Patricia that, she nodded that, yes, she knew who he was. And it kind of freaked her out a little bit. Patrick wanted a copy of the video from the ATM machine for November 22nd, Thanksgiving, because he had used it that day and wanted to give it to the police to prove where he was. When he made the request, Patricia didn't answer him right away, so he took a step closer to her, which caused her to step back. Patrick's kind of a big guy, too. He's tall. He told Patricia that he knew that Kelsey had called her mom on November 25th, so Patricia questioned him, then why do you need the video from November 22nd to prove your whereabouts?
So this is happening at the bank?
Mm-hmm. This pissed Patrick off, because he then said, I never said anything about Kelsey calling her mom on the 25th, correcting Patricia's interpretation of what she just heard him say. So to defuse the situation, Patricia told him that while she'd love to give him a copy of the video, she wouldn't be able to because at the end of every week, the bank takes the tapes from the week prior and tapes over them at the start of a new week. With this news, Patrick stormed out of the bank in a huff. Patricia was relieved he left, and she immediately contacted the Woodland Park police to report what had just happened. However, before she did, she looked around the bank quickly with her heart pounding in her chest just to make sure Patrick had really left. The following day, December 6th, a crime scene analyst, Tanya Atkinson, she was with the CBI. She went to Kelsey's condo to do blood testing. She knew that Clint had reported blood in the bathroom, so that's where she started her work. She found blood or traces of blood all over the bathroom. It was in the toilet bowl, floor, on the side of the bathtub next to the toilet, on the wall with a towel rack, on the towel rack, on the base of the trash can between the toilet and the tub, on the countertop, and on the ceiling above the toilet. Like I said, it was everywhere.
So they use luminol?
Mm-hmm. She discovered a spray of blood on the cabinets, the cabinet hinges, the doorknob, the lower part of the bathroom door, and a wall outlet.
So that would indicate some sort of beating.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because there was exactly like a spray. Due to this evidence that there had been quite a lot of blood in Kelsey's bathroom, the Woodland Park police and the CBI determined that Kelsey wasn't just a missing persons case. It was a possible homicide. A few days later, on December 11th, Patrick visited a local Verizon store. He encountered an employee named David, and when he approached David, he asked him if he knew who he was.
You know who I am, man.
I mean, what the fuck is that? David nodded. Patrick wanted to know if David could help him change the PIN number on a phone that was on his Verizon account. David told him sure, he could help, but he just needed the phone. And Patrick didn't have it with him. That was a problem. Patrick grew noticeably nervous and asked David if it were possible to get records from a phone that was, say, hypothetically broken. Like, possibly busted up with a hammer.
Okay.
In David's mind, this caused alarm bells.
Well, fuck yeah.
To go
come on, buddy.
Right? Like, what?
Come on.
So David excused himself to go to the bathroom. David decided he wasn't coming out and that he was going to wait it out, staying in the bathroom until Patrick left.
So this is an employee that's going to wait it out in the bathroom?
Yes.
Okay.
He's going to wait. Eventually, David heard the bell from the customer entrance go off and thought, Patrick probably had left, but what if it was a trap?
What?
You know, he's like on high alert. He decided to brave it out, and he peeked into the store. Patrick was gone. David grabbed his phone I don't think he took it into the bathroom with him. I think it was outside the bathroom. So when he got out, he grabbed his phone and immediately called the police to report this weird encounter he had just had with Patrick.
Now, I'm not trying to judge David, but if I were, man, he's the biggest wuss ever. Come on, dude, grow some balls.
I know. I just thought it was funny. I'm just going to sit in this bathroom forever. Finally, a few days later, on December 14th, police and CBI agents executed a search warrant on Patrick's home. He was inside at the time, and he was holding Kaylee as the police conducted their search. They ended up taking away over 80 items of evidence. That same day, police questioned a woman named Crystal Lee. You might be wondering,
who's Crystal Lee?
Who's Crystal Lee? Well, Crystal was Patrick's secret girlfriend.
Oh.
Yeah. Crystal had met Patrick when they had been in college together, and they dated for a while. They eventually went their separate ways, but Crystal never got over Patrick, despite marrying a different man. She eventually divorced her husband after she and Patrick rekindled their romance, and she was cheating on her husband with Patrick, and Patrick was cheating on Kelsey. Crystal and her ex-husband remained friendly and actually continued to live in the same house after their divorce with their two children.
So she was with Patrick for a while. This is a continuous affair.
Yes. Like they lost touch over the years, but then they always seemed to find each other.
On and off again?
Yes. After initially questioning Crystal on December 14th, the FBI, who had recently gotten involved in the case, questioned her again on December 20th. This time, she was questioned with her attorney present. Later, prosecutors would refer to this conversation as to when they made a deal with the devil.
Oh.
Yeah.
Snap.
The FBI suspected Crystal knew more about Kelsey's disappearance than she had let on during her first interview with the Woodland Park cops. The FBI wasted no time in getting to the point, and Crystal ended up spilling her guts. She told the story of what really happened to Kelsey. And before I tell you what really happened, we're going to take a break.
So tell us all, Tanya, what really happened.
Well, on November 22nd, Kelsey had run to the Safeway grocery store and was seen with Kaylee's car seat in tow in a grocery cart. So she had Kaylee with her.
And that's where the receipt came from, right?
Yes. She went home and she put her groceries away. And while she was home, Patrick called. He wanted to come over. She agreed. She and Patrick were in a good place, or so she thought. Patrick had recently agreed to go to Kelsey's company's Christmas party with her, and she felt like that was a positive step in their relationship.
Had they been having problems?
No.
Okay.
Patrick's agreement to go to the Christmas party was something that she interpreted to mean that they were in a committed relationship together.
So things are going smoothly.
Yes, absolutely. Things are going smoothly in Kelsey's mind. When Patrick arrived, their daughter Kaylee was playing in her playpen in a nearby bedroom. He asked Kelsey to sit down and that they were going to play a game. Patrick was going to light some candles and Kelsey had to figure out what the scent was for each one. Kelsey was always up for a little fun, so she said sure, and she allowed Patrick to blindfold her with a sweater that he wrapped around her face.
That's just a little weird.
Very weird. Unfortunately for Kelsey, though, Patrick's mind wasn't on playing a game. Patrick insisted to Kelsey, though, that the game was going to be really fun.
Okay.
As he was saying this, she was already blindfolded with the sweater, and she noticed that Patrick's voice was getting further away from her, and he must have gone into another room. He came back after about a minute, and Kelsey could already smell the candle that he had lit. Then, as Kelsey heard Patrick take in a sharp breath, she felt pain in the back of her head, neck, and shoulders. And the force of the blow that just hit her pushed her from her seating position, and she ended up on all fours.
On the floor?
Yes, on the floor. She began crawling, and the sweater fell from her face. When she looked up, she saw Patrick with a baseball bat raised above his head, and there was blood splattered on his arms, hands, and shirt. She could feel something wet dripping down her face, and she knew after seeing Patrick with blood on him that it was her blood dripping on her face.
That motherfucker.
Right? She pleaded with him for her life, and she said, please stop. But Patrick swung again.
Oh, my God. I can't stand baseball bats.
I know.
Beatings. Oh, God.
She said again, please stop, please. And he hit her again and again until she was dead. After killing Kelsey, I'm not positive how he got her body out of the condo. Those details are fuzzy.
And he still has to deal with his daughter, too, right?
Who's right. There. Yeah, she was there. A couple days after Patrick killed her, that's when he called Crystal. So it was about November 24th. And Patrick told her that she needed to go to Kelsey's home, that there was a real mess that she needed to clean up. And Crystal was aware of Kelsey and that she and Patrick had a child together. But Crystal seemed to be okay with this.
She's probably just happy to have that amazing asshole.
Right. I don't get what was so alluring about Patrick, too, by the way.
I'm going to tell you straight up, if somebody I'm in love with tells me they just beat a woman to death with a bat, that's a deal breaker.
Right.
It's a deal breaker, and they're never getting laid.
Right.
At least not by me.
Right. When Patrick told this to Crystal, she didn't understand exactly what was going on. Until he said, quote, look for a tooth that might have fallen down an air vent.
Nope. Nope. Deal broken. Deal right. off.
And that's the moment she knew something awful had happened.
That's absolutely horrific.
Isn't it? Look for a tooth?
No.
No. And something awful did indeed happen at Kelsey's condo. Crystal knew when she walked inside that she had crossed a line between good and evil, between right and wrong. Crystal saw that there was blood everywhere. It was on the walls, the floor, the appliances in the kitchen, on pillows, on the sofa. There was even blood on some of Kaylee's toys and stuffed animals.
That's just wrong.
I know. Crystal loved Patrick and would do anything for him. And that's why she's there, basically. She was also a nurse, so she wasn't squeamish when it came to blood. But when she looked around, there was no confusing what had happened. Especially considering Patrick had asked Crystal 3 times in the past to kill Kelsey for him.
Time out. I'm dating somebody and then you're asking me to kill somebody. That's when you fucking break up.
Right.
Okay?
That is a definite red flag.
Thank you.
Yes. These red flags are popping up everywhere.
Because someday it could be you.
Right.
That he wants killed.
Exactly.
People, come on.
Come on. When she walked into that condo, she thought maybe this would finally be the thing that would cause Patrick to decide to be with her forever.
Oh, God damn it. Mm-hmm. Stop it.
I know. Before she got to work, Crystal put on a hairnet, gloves, a white coverall suit, and booties to cover her shoes. The cleanup took her 4 hours, which gave her a lot of time to think about exactly what went on. Obviously, Patrick had killed Kelsey, and she knew that people always said the first kill is the hardest, and it gets easier after that first one. She also knew that she and Patrick were the only people to know what happened to Kelsey at that moment. As she cleaned, she grew more and more afraid of Patrick. What if he killed her too? She decided to leave a few blood spots behind. She left a spot on the fireplace, some on the appliances, the window, and the floor, and also the bathroom that I told you about.
I have a better idea. Crystal could have just called 911.
Thank you. She decided to leave this blood behind as clues to the police in case she disappeared.
Okay. Or we could give them one big clue and call 911.
Yes, call right now.
Let them know. Come, there's a murder scene. I'm sorry. I'm a little pissed off right
now.
I know.
I'm just these people. Are so infuriating. She gathered everything up when she was done into 2 large black garbage bags and 4 white ones. She had to throw out the sofa pillows and some of Kaylee's toys that wouldn't wash clean, like especially the stuffed animals. She hauled everything out to her car, and she had placed the bags on the ground And that spot where she had set the bags down when she was opening up her car was actually the spot that Lucy had signaled.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. While she was finishing up, Patrick texted her to see what she was up to.
Hey, what you doing?
What you doing? She told him she was almost done.
Just looking for a tooth.
Right. And she ended up finding it, by the way.
This is absurd.
I know. He told her he wanted to meet up with her when she was done because they had to talk.
Oh, shit.
Patrick and Crystal spoke several times afterward in the days after the murder. Patrick coached Crystal in case the police ever spoke with her. Despite all the coaching, Crystal messed up. She told police in her first interview that she had been with Patrick all day on November 24th. That would have been the day she cleaned up the condo. However, her telephone records showed a different story. They had talked to one another on their cell phones several times that day. And if they had been together, why would they call each other?
I don't know. Sometimes I call people in my house while I'm laying in bed. They're like, hey, can you run the dishwasher? I'm just too lazy to get up.
I know. I text my child all the time, too. I get what you're saying. During her interview with the FBI, this was the second interview that I told you about that was on December 20th. Crystal told the agents that Patrick had asked her on three separate occasions, I kind of alluded to this earlier, if she would kill Kelsey for him. The first time he asked her was in September. He told her she should get to know Kelsey and then try to poison her coffee. Kelsey was a big fan of Starbucks drinks, and he said it would just be easy to slip some poison into her coffee.
Then why doesn't he just do it?
I know, right? Why have Crystal do it? Crystal had actually bought Kelsey a Starbucks drink once, but she didn't poison it. She ended up leaving it on Kelsey's porch and rang the bell.
That's pretty random.
Mm-hmm. Patrick again asked Crystal that second time to kill Kelsey and gave her a metal pipe to do it with.
Oh, fuck no. She, no, thanks.
I know. She took the pipe, but eventually returned it to him, saying she just couldn't do it. The third time Patrick asked Crystal to kill Kelsey was about a week after he gave her that metal pipe. He gave her an aluminum baseball bat and told her just to, quote, start swinging, unquote. Patrick said he would get rid of the body by taking it to a dumpster, so she just had to do the killing part.
Oh, that's all?
That's all. But Crystal again told Patrick that she couldn't do it. When she told Patrick the third time that she couldn't kill Kaylee for him, he got really angry at her and stormed around, yelling she must not love him and Kaylee enough to help make their lives better. Patrick had been telling Crystal that Kelsey was a bad mom and physically abused Kaylee, and that she was a terrible alcoholic. None of this was ever proven, by the way, and from all accounts, Kelsey was a very loving mother who adored Kaylee. Patrick was just setting the scene for Crystal to think Kelsey was an abusive alcoholic.
Have these people never heard of the court system?
I know.
I don't understand this.
I know, it's so stupid, right? Patrick dropped the topic of killing Kelsey with Crystal until November 24th when he told Crystal that she needed to go clean Kelsey's condo for him. Crystal explained to the agents that after she had cleaned Kelsey's home, she met up with Patrick afterward, because remember, he said he needed to talk. During their talk, he admitted everything to her. While she told them the story, Crystal was sobbing. She told them she left them clues in the form of blood on the toilet and other places in Kelsey's home. The agents then asked her if Patrick ever told her what he did with Kelsey's body. She told them he didn't tell her initially, but ended up telling her a couple days later after she had cleaned the condo. He called her and told her he needed her help again, and she needed to meet him at the property that was behind his home. When she met him, he had a very large black tote bag in the back of his truck. Initially, after killing Kelsey, Patrick had stuffed her body inside of the black tote and took it to a place called the Nash Ranch, which is located in Fremont County, Colorado.
So he's familiar with the farming and all that. He's a horse trainer or something, right?
Right. This ranch was a place where he had the sole lease on the property for grazing rights, like for the animals to graze. He was the only one at the time who'd be able to access the ranch. meaning he was the only one with a key, and he was pretty secure in the knowledge that it was highly unlikely that anyone would find what he ended up leaving there. Patrick told Crystal he had stashed Kelsey's body in the barn on the Nash Ranch, up on the second floor loft on top of some bales of hay. On the night that Patrick called Crystal for help this second time, Crystal helped Patrick haul the huge black tote along with the 6 bags of trash that Crystal had taken after cleaning up Kelsey's home into a large burn trough, which was 2 feet wide, 4 feet long, and 2 feet deep, which was located on Patrick's property. Patrick had Crystal collect wood and put that in the pit first. Then the trash bags went in and the black tote went on top. Patrick then took a gas can and drenched everything before finally taking a quart of motor oil and adding that to the mix. Patrick lit a match and threw it on the pile and then took 2 large pieces of corrugated metal and formed a tent over the fire. He tented the fire so it wouldn't burn too high and the smoke wouldn't be able to be seen too far in the air. After Crystal gave her stories to the investigators, they took her to Kelsey's home and she again described to them what she walked into the day she came to clean. After the visit to Kelsey's home, the agents went to the Nash Ranch and they left Crystal behind. In exchange for her confession and in agreeing to testify against Patrick in his possible trial, Crystal agreed to plead guilty to tampering with evidence and she faced a maximum of 3 years in prison. At the Nash Ranch, agents found dark red or brown spots on the top of bales of hay 10 feet high and an indentation on one of the bales that was just the right shape of what could have held Kelsey's body. They decided they needed to get cadaver dogs to the ranch ASAP. Soon, a cadaver dog, a bloodhound named Radar, who had never had a false signal and had trained for 5,000 hours with his trainer, was sent to the Nash Ranch. When he was brought inside the barn, Radar initially didn't find anything. However, he soon caught a whiff of something up in the loft where the bales of hay were. Radar, who had a 100% success rate, signaled that there had been human decomposition found in the barn. He was especially interested in the hay bale that had the reddish-brown stains and indented in the shape of a body. Finally, on December 21st, 2018, Patrick was arrested for first-degree murder and solicitation of first-degree murder in connection with Kelsey's disappearance. The investigators were excited to get the arrest warrant because Kelsey's body still hadn't been found, and a lot of the evidence was circumstantial. When he was arrested, Kaylee was removed from his home and placed in Kelsey's family's care. While he was in jail, Patrick was on the lowest rung of the hierarchy in the jail because he was accused of killing a woman while his baby daughter was in the next room. One inmate, Jacob Bentley, took an interest in Patrick.
That's never good. Not when you're in jail.
He wondered if Patrick really did what he was accused of doing because, of course, the news has his face plastered all over it, and Jacob saw it from jail. Jacob was a scary dude, one that confidently strode around the jail. He had lots of tattoos on his face and neck that told everyone about his gang affiliations. Nobody was going to fuck with him. During this time in the jail, though, Jacob was only serving a 30-day sentence for a misdemeanor, but he still walked around like he owned the place. One day, he decided he was going to get to know Patrick, and he sat down next to him and asked him, "So did you smoke your old lady or what?"
Oh, way to get right to the point.
Exactly. When he got no answer, he asked again, "Well, did you?" Patrick, never meeting Jacob's eye, repeatedly claimed he was innocent. Said he never did it. Jacob wasn't convinced, though, but he didn't let on. He gave Patrick some advice and told him, "Just do what your lawyers tell you to do, and you'll get through this." Later, in his jail cell, Jacob received a note from Patrick that showed him all he needed to know. Jacob said to himself, "He's a fucking psychopath. He killed his old lady. I knew it." Crystal testified at Patrick's trial. When Patrick's defense team tried to unravel her story and imply that she only came forward to save her own ass, she insisted that she confessed because it was the right thing to do and she just couldn't live with herself with this secret anymore. She told the court everything that I told you earlier, down to the last words uttered by Kelsey before Patrick finished her off. Jacob Bentley, that inmate I told you about, the scary dude, he made a surprise appearance at Patrick's trial. He had given the prosecution 17 handwritten notes he had received from Patrick while they were in jail together. They were on paper towel scraps, receipts from commissary purchases, and paper napkins. Patrick had pleaded with Jacob in all of the notes to use his gang connections to murder the district attorney.
Because that's going to somehow be helpful.
Yes.
They won't replace the district attorney with a new one.
He also wanted murdered several CBI and FBI agents, Crystal, and several prosecution witnesses. Because that's not going to seem weird. In all the notes, Patrick told Jacob to memorize the contents and then flush after he read them. He obviously didn't do that. One pleaded with Jacob, quote, "Help, help me please, man. I repay however. My life and my little girl's life depends on you. Throw me down your plans / ideas," end quote. Several of the notes told Jacob to have his gang connections kill the targets in the desert and then dispose of them there. Patrick's defense tried to insinuate that Jacob was testifying for a lighter sentence, but he reminded them he was only serving 30 days for a robbery misdemeanor.
And what does it matter? He has those notes.
Exactly.
He didn't flush them, right?
No, he didn't flush them. Hell no. After the prosecution rested its case, Patrick's defense team had their turn to prove Patrick's innocence. However, his defense team never called any witnesses and rested its case right after the prosecution did. That's never good. After the jury deliberated for less than 4 hours, and that included a lunch break, they came back with their unanimous decision. Patrick was guilty on all counts. As the verdict was read, members of Kelsey's family openly and loudly sobbed. Patrick sat in disbelief, and he was in shock when the judge handed down his sentence immediately following the verdict.
How much of a dumbass do you have to be shocked?
Seriously, right?
There's something way off with Patrick.
For sure.
I mean, we could have a whole episode on this.
Patrick's a dipshit. Patrick was sentenced to life in prison without parole, plus an additional 156 years and a 5-year sentence for the solicitation to murder charges. In April 2020, Patrick wrote a letter to CBS Channel 4 in Denver, insisting that he was innocent, and he claimed his defense was inadequate because they called no witnesses and failed to provide any type of defense for him.
Probably because there was none.
Thank you. I mean, seriously, dude. He said in the letter, quote, "I want nothing more than to find out what happened to Kelsey. I stayed silent this whole time at the direction of my attorney. I want nothing more than to find out what happened to Kelsey," end quote. He said it twice in the letter. Crystal was sentenced to 3 years. However, in February of this year, she appealed her sentence and it was overturned. The appeals court said her sentence had exceeded the maximum for the charge she pleaded to, which was fourth-degree tampering with evidence. She was resentenced and given 18 months. In March, she was paroled after serving about 12 months, and she has to report to her parole officer for 1 year following her release. So she's out. Kelsey's body has never been found. Her mother was granted custody of Kaylee, who is now about 4 years old. Kelsey's mom says she will someday tell Kaylee about Kelsey, but she just doesn't know how. I'm going to end this with a short discussion about Patrick's motive. It was unclear to investigators why Patrick killed Kelsey so savagely. He didn't do it for money, and I doubt he did it to be with Crystal because he was already with her. Investigators believe he did it so he could have sole custody of Kaylee. It makes me sad to think about this motive because it seemed like Kelsey really loved him and was excited to have and raise a baby with him and merge their lives. I figured he must have had some pent-up anger since he killed her in such a gruesome way. I just don't get it.
I don't either, especially considering there weren't any telltale red flags out there for her to recognize the animosity he had.
I mean, I read a book for this podcast called The Murder of Kelsey Barrett by Rod Cackley. And there were a few instances where Patrick had spurts of like anger. And Kelsey's mom saw it once and it wasn't anything like that was ongoing. So at least that nobody reported. So I don't know. It just seemed like an awful way to kill someone. And I figured he had to be mad at her for something. Did he feel trapped? I don't know. So
he wasn't even married to her.
I know. That's what I just don't get. I just, you know, she moved there for him and she loved him. And like I said, from all accounts, she was a good mom. She loved him. I just don't get it. So anyway, well, Talia, that is my story for this week. And before we go, we have some business to take care of.
It's business time.
We have some shout outs.
Yay!
So I'll read the list. Please hold your applause till the end.
For those that don't know, these are our Apple Channel subscribers and our Patreon members. If you want to get ad-free early releases,
extra episodes,
exclusive
for members only,
then you too can become a member or a subscriber. You can go to our website, crimesandconsequences.com or patreon.com/TNTcrimes.
Or you can go to your podcast app on your iPhone and become a subscriber.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about it. I have an Android. That's why I just looked at you with like a deer in headlights.
You're like, what?
Huh?
And just to let everyone know, the episodes that are on the Apple subscription are the same episodes that are on our Patreon members only site. So there's not different episodes.
With all that being said,
here we go. Our new Apple subscribers are Linda and Chloe. Then we have Morgan, Sandy, Lindsay, Amy, Dee Dee, Heather, Karen, JM, Samantha, another Lindsay, Alicia, Jennifer A., Emma, Carrie, April, Brian, Tyron, Susie, another Carrie, Kayla, another Amy, another Karen, Courtney, Laura, Robin, Loette, Aaron, Chelsea S., Jahan. It's either Kia or Kaya.
Either way. Thank you.
Denise, Natalie, Cora, Chelsea J., and we also wanted to give a special thanks to our editor, Joe.
From Clovercrest Media.
We also have a guest contributor on our website, Mariah.
Thank you, Mariah.
And our Facebook moderator, Katie.
Thank
you, Katie.
Thank you, everybody, so much for all your support. And we want to thank you guys for listening to us. We really appreciate all of you.
It takes a village. Also, before we go, if you'd like to find out more information about this story, you can go to our website, crimesandconsequences.com. We have an episode page for all of our episodes.
And we also have merchandise.
Oh, that's right.
You can go to our shop there and buy some really cool stuff.
You know you want to.
You're going to look super sexy when you do. One of them says, Crimes and Consequences, dead people aren't sexy. And we have another one that says, it's a pisser.
It's a pisser. Don't kill each other.
And what the fuck, Tanya? That's my favorite.
Oh, I hate people too.
I hate people.
I got that one for myself.
So check it out.
You can also find us on social media, on Facebook and Instagram at Hardcore True Crime.
That's a lot of business.
I know. Is that everything?
And we got commercials. We're like a real podcast now.
It's like being a real adult.
Oh,
I feel like such a grown up with our podcast.
I know. We had to put our big girl panties on and
seriously
get this going.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. And until next week,
don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.